Council meeting for Tuesday, June 12th, 2018 is hereby called to order. I would like to welcome everyone here this morning. We have one change to the agenda this morning. Under 8.1, under economic development, we will add REN appointment, R-E-N appointment, Regional Enterprise Network. Are there any other additions or changes to the agenda this morning? If not, a motion to accept the amended agenda would be in order. Moved by Counselor Fitz, seconded by Counselor Muse. Any discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous, thank you. Next on the agenda, under 3.0 presentations, we have 3.1, Queens County Museum. Linda Rayfuse and George Mitchell, if you'd like to come forward to the presentation desk, please. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. Linda's going to do the talking.
Okay.
So first off, I would just like to thank the CAO, Chris, and our mayor for inviting us to come and give the region an update on our heritage complex, one that we're very proud of, and for preserving the history of our county. So we have three sites currently that we're running, and so I'd like to update you on those sites. So starting off with the Queens County Museum, of course, the Queens County Museum is 40 years old now, been in the community for a long time. But previous to that, since 1929 with the Queens County Historical Society, this building and property is owned by the province of Nova Scotia, and they continue to maintain it. We're currently in the discussion of having a future vision of an expansion project, and so I'm sure you'll be hearing a lot about that in the future. Can you hear me okay?
Sure.
So the Queens County Museum, our mandate is to collect the history of all of Queens County, North Queens, South Queens. The program that we're on, where we receive a third of our funding from the province, a third of our budget, that funding, we're part of a program called the Community Museum Assistance Program. We have two other sister museums in the county who are also part of that program, who receive provincial grants, and that's the Milton Blacksmith Shop and the North Queens Heritage House. So the three of us continue to work together to help each other and consult with each other. And then, of course, the rest of our budget, we have to fundraise that ourselves. And part of that, of course, is thanks from the annual grant that we get from the region. So even though our mandate is to collect and preserve the history, the human and natural history of this county, we continue to focus on our privateering history, which the Liverpool Packet was built as one of the large exhibits in the museum several years ago. Actually, just as a little note of interest, the two little boys in the slide are direct descendants of Captain Joseph Barse, who come to visit us regularly. We also continue to feature our Mi'kmaq history, which is very unique in this end of the province. We have a wonderful Mi'kmaq history, and we will continue. We tell it well. We have one of the largest collections on this end of the province. Over the years, we have established a very strong partnership with the Department of Education and all of the schools in Queens County. And we usually, between probably our busiest months of school programming with school children, is May, June, and December. And this is just a little example of some of the programming that we offer with our Queens County school children. Over the years, we've programmed all of the schools. We also travel to the schools to do programming. And the last several years, we now do programming and receive schools from Lunenburg County and Shelburne County. Actually, we just did Lunenburg County, and Friday we do Shelburne County. So that's some of the programming that we do with the kids, and within those topics are breakdowns of several different programs. This is just an example of some of our annual events and fundraisers that we do at the museum. So the first in the upper left is our annual Easter egg hunt for children. In the upper right is our Big Boo, our Halloween program. This one we're currently looking at revisiting, that we might turn it back into a children's event. And the lower left is our annual East Coast Paracon. We're not going to have Paracon this year. We're actually, again, revisiting this one to make it a bigger and better Paracon. And then, of course, the lower right is our Festival of Trees and Dickensville, an annual event that continues to grow. The Festival of Trees in Dickensville, we had over 1,500 people come through the museum to see that exhibit, and I should mention we had an annual visitation of over 6,700 people this year at the Queen, or no, I should say that was last year's stats at the Queens County Museum. Every county in this province has a county archives, and the county archives is in our museum, the Thomas Riddell Research Center. And we have one of the, and I'm not just saying it because we work there, but we do have one of the nicest research centers in the province. And I've been told that by other county archives. So we move on to our newest kid on the block, the Queens Museum of Justice, which we are just thrilled to open again for the second season. And there's still a lot of promotion to do on this little gem, because there's still a lot of local people in this county that do not realize the little gem that they have here in Queens County. This building, you know, it's not only unique for its architecture, but it played a big role in Confederation, where in 1867 all of the people in Queens County came to this building to vote. This is where the voting took place for Queens County for Confederation, and Queens County voted no. They did not want to be part of Confederation. So I know you were there yesterday for the tour, so I'm sure you all enjoyed the tour. Just keep in mind that this is a museum that is growing, so there's still a lot of exhibits that are to come. We have an awesome courthouse committee team. And they're so knowledgeable. There's a retired federal lawyer on one of them, as one of the committee members, and a couple of the other one builds exhibits. He's an exhibit designer for work. We're just so fortunate to have these people on that team. We've had so much interest from the legal system. In the upper right corner, the barrister's robes there on the right are our retired prosecutor Craig Harding. Those are his robes. Up by the judge's desk, those are the robes that were collected by provincial judge Ann Derrick. And her partner, Archie Kaiser, he's a professor of law at Dalhousie. They both have an extreme interest in this courthouse and have actually donated part of their library, their legal books, to which are housed in the judges' chambers. We just had a visit from Judge Hiram Carver, who loves this courthouse and told many stories. And he still has all of his judges' robes, so three sets actually, so he's going to donate those to the courthouse. We just received a really nice donation of furniture from York Tutty, from his office, because of his retiring. The desk that's in the lower corner, that came from the old Scotiabank, and you know, for any of us who remember back in the day what Scotiabank used to look like, it was beautiful. This desk, this big clerk's desk, used to sit in that bank. So that's a little treasure for York to donate to us. The desk, I don't know if you were in the judges' chambers, but the little desk that sits in the judges' chambers was Lester Clement's desk. Oh, probably the girls told you all this, so I won't go through it. Anyhow, we have many future plans for the courthouse, because it does have the colonial connection to Simeon Perkins, who did sit as the first magistrate. And again, I know you probably heard all of that yesterday. So there'll be more exhibits that are coming with the early colonial justice system. And there will be, because I don't know, did the girls tell you about the old courthouse, the first
yes,
one?
Yes, they did, yeah.
Did they tell you we tore down the oldest courthouse in Kansas?
Yes, they did.
Anyhow, so yeah, we're going to work all of the colonial system into that as well, which is a very, people love that early history. So because the courthouse has no budget, we do little fundraisers in order to put exhibits in there. We do have to pay for building materials and such. So we do offer outreach and events to be able to be held at the museum to raise money to put exhibits and future, and some of the future ones. There's going to be a lot of interpretive paneling that's going to go on the walls of the courthouse, but they will, even though the design will be all free, the building materials for those panels, there will be a cost. So we collect money, we offer the courthouse for weddings, for wedding ceremonies, which we did have one last year, and we offer singing, because you know the acoustics in that building is absolutely beautiful. So we did have an event with Dick Kenneberry there, which was very well attended. And this is just a part of our outreach. We do host the law class from the high school who used the courthouse, which we're very pleased with. And we also, we're working with one of the teachers on doing the kids doing a mock trial. The province supplies the script for a mock trial for these law students, and so that's a future thing that will be happening. So that's the courthouse, the highlights, and I know, as I say, you received the rest of it yesterday. So the Perkins House has been closed for a couple of years. The Perkins House is owned and totally funded by the province of Nova Scotia under the Nova Scotia Museum. And it's been in this community as a museum since 1957, when it opened its doors thanks to Tom Riddall. And at which that's the opening there in the black and white shot. And the Perkins Diary, of course, is a, Simeon Perkins is a nationally recognized man with the, because of his diary, with the National Register in Canada. And I should say, I forgot to mention back to the courthouse, I'm not sure if the girls would have mentioned it yesterday, but myself and one of my coworkers, along with Councillor Johnson and Councillor Muse, sit on the Heritage Advisory Committee, which we're very pleased to do that. And we currently have on the agenda our recommendation for the courthouse to seek national recognition as a national heritage property. It's time to take it one level further. So I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that in the future. So right now with Perkins House, Perkins House probably won't open for, it won't open next summer. It may open the following summer. Perkins House is going to go through a full restoration. It's been an uphill battle, hasn't it, George? But we persevered, and government has come through, the province has come through, and with meeting with all of the people that we needed to meet with, they came out and said that they were going to use Perkins House as an example. Something that's never been done in the province is a full restoration of a heritage property. Now, they've never done this in Nova Scotia except for Province House in Halifax. So it was time to choose a house that was owned by the province, and they've chosen Perkins House. So Perkins House will go through a full restoration. And according to Deputy Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal, when Perkins House reopens, it will look just like the day that Simeon Perkins first walked through the doors of his new home. And so we got very excited about that, and they said, just don't hold us to a timeline, but we are going to work at this and get it done within the next couple of years. Now, they did complete phase one. Phase one was completed just around the middle of December last year, and that was to put a French drain around the entire perimeter of the Perkins House, and that's to keep any water away from the house. So that's phase one, that's finished. Now, the beginning of phase two has already started. They put out the tender for the design work to hire an architect to begin the design work, and then, which actually the architect is at Perkins House right now waiting for us to come back to meet with him. And the restoration will begin in October, and they're hoping to wrap the house in such a way that they'll be able to continue the work right throughout the winter, because they know the timeline is important to get this house open, so to continue to work on it. And we've been very pleased with the communication, the open communication with the province, of them always keeping us informed of how what's happening next. And just again as a little side note, the lady in the photograph is Simeon Perkins' fourth great-granddaughter, who traveled all the way from New Zealand to see the home of her ancestor for the first time. So she's hoping to, and actually when she came, the house had just closed, but she did get to go in it regardless. So she's hoping to come back, her and her husband, when the house reopens. So I'm sure there'll be a big celebration when Perkins House reopens, hopefully in 2020. As community outreach as well, because the province continues to ask us, you know, to engage our community and be part of it. So we were just thrilled to have the region agree to let us supply sports exhibits over at Queen's Place. This is a way, you know, we're constantly saying the words that for museums, and we all say it right across the country, that collections grow. But museum collections grow, but buildings don't, which again is one of the reasons why we're looking at an expansion. But being able to do exhibits like this allows us to get space to put these exhibits in that we can't do at the museum because of lack of space. So we were very pleased to offer 4 sports exhibits last year, and this year actually our first one coming up, the next one that's going in within the next couple of weeks, is the Nova Scotia Guiding Association. So that should be a fairly interesting exhibit. We also, for the last couple of years, with Dan McLaren, we do a weekly show where we bring history stories to QCCR, to their listeners, history stories from the Queens County Museum. And this radio, half-hour radio show, is called The History Vault, and we have a lot of fun doing that. And we'll continue doing that as long as the radio station will have us. And so we're very thankful for that as well. And I would say that's it, a brief highlight of who we are, what we do for our community, for our school children, and how we save our history and preserve it. And I think we do it well. So we would open up for questions.
Counselor, have a question or comment? Deputy Mayor McLeod.
Thank you, Linda. Great job as always. Getting back to the Perkins House, which I think is the community's focus on that. And you say that over the next, there's different phases over the next several years. Are you guaranteed that? I mean, for example, if there was a government change, that sort of thing, are you guaranteed that money and that
Absolutely.
Process?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
It's been committed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah. Their words are, it's going to happen, and she's getting the full meal deal.
Okay.
That
great.
Was their words.
Now, will you be taking photos of each of the phases, like the transition from, that would be nice to have.
We've been doing that.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
so,
we have. And we're continually posting them on our Perkins House page.
Great.
There haven't been any lately, of course, because work stopped the middle of October.
Yes.
The only phase, the only part of phase one that was a visual was the installation of that French drain.
I see.
And so you probably won't see any other visual begin or like any, I don't know, machinery or whatever coming in until October. Right now, the architects they've just been hired. And as I say, he's down there right now for his first meeting. And so we're excited about that.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. We're hoping that, as you know, Perkins House is a seasonal museum and she's closed for the winter. But we're really pushing for a heating system a better heating system to be installed in Perkins House, because we would really like to be able to do programming throughout the year in Perkins House with heat. I mean, we had a beautiful time. It was during one of the house tours when we opened up Perkins House at Christmas time. Oh, it was just spectacular. So we'd like to continue that. Mm-hmm. And when Perkins House opens, we're going to, this is from the Nova Scotia Museum and the interpretive team in there, we're going to lean more towards living history, because that's where museums are going today. Mm-hmm. People want to be more engaged and interact with the site, so we will turn a little bit more to living history and a bit more animation, and you'll see lots of things going on.
So you say you're looking into that, or is that part of the funding that you have in order to get that heat?
Well, that will be up to transportation and infrastructure renewal. They're paying the bill, so that we have put the we put the request in there. I mean, we really don't have much say. We are part of the conversation, and we've said, would it be nice, could we have like a whole new heating system in there that we could maybe open the house in the winter time rather than currently the way it is? Like, there is a heating system in Perkins House, but currently the way it is, when the house closes for the season, the heat is just turned down low enough that, it keeps the dampness off the house, but wouldn't allow you to go in and do anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Councilor Kelly.
Hi. I just think it's amazing. I mean, the courthouse, for one, I'm so pleased that what's happening with the courthouse.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing, and it's just perfect. The timing, everything.
Yeah.
And, there's so much potential there. said, the Perkins House is taken care of 100%.
Yep.
You've got the museum and now the Queens County Museum, I guess the main building or
mm-hmm.
whatever, and then the courthouse, which you say was only a third funded.
We have no budget for the courthouse because the courthouse belongs to the region.
Okay, but I mean, as part of your mandate in running that as well, do you not put that as part of your budget in the?
No.
No. So
our money comes from the province of Nova Scotia, the third of the money.
Yeah.
So when we want to make purchases for the courthouse, we would have a fundraiser for that. We
okay.
have to. We supply summer student. For the courthouse through the summer student funding, of course. But as you know, that's not entirely covered. So we do have a donate. We don't charge an admission there. We do have a donation box.
Yeah.
So what we receive in that donation box throughout the season and what we receive through those little fundraisers that we have in the courthouse, that money is allocated to go towards any expense that we would have for the courthouse.
Okay.
And where an expense would lie there would be any building materials that would be required to build an interpretive panel, to build an exhibit, to do something there that it would all go towards interpretation.
So the third of your funding from the province goes to the Queens County Museum.
Yes.
And that, so what is your total budget? You're fundraising two-thirds of that amount. What's
yep.
your total budget for that?
We raised two-thirds of our budget through the annual grant that we received from the province for the Perkins House. That's 100% funded.
Yeah.
We operate that building for the province of Nova Scotia.
Yep.
So the Queens County Museum, their funding comes from the Community Museum Assistance Program,
yep.
which is a totally different program.
Yep.
But because we operate the Perkins House for the province, we charge them an expense.
Oh, okay.
We charge them a service fee
right.
for operating that museum all year round. And so that gets allocated over to the Queens County Museum budget to go along with that third that we receive from the province.
Okay.
Then the rest, of course, we receive the annual grant from the region. Then of course, whatever money comes into the museum, our own donation box, we have a wonderful gift shop that now brings a lot of revenue,
okay.
finally, into the building. We have the research center. All of those other little things that go together make up the rest of the budget.
Okay.
Yeah, and it works. We have to work at it, but it works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Councillor Fisk?
Great presentation, Linda.
Thank you.
I just want to mention, we were around yesterday, as you know, we were at the courthouse. And
yep.
Very impressed with the two young ladies that are working there.
Yeah.
Miss LeBlanc really has done her history. Worked very hard.
Yes.
Well spoken. Both those young ladies deserve credit.
Yes. They're wonderful
it's
employees.
It's an asset to your ventures.
They are.
And really enjoyed the whole day.
Good.
But now, the Festival of Trees, I
yeah.
had the opportunity last year to see that. And also the Dixon
Dickensville, yeah.
Which everybody knows maybe in this room that George Mitchell has a lot to do with that. and his donation is greatly appreciated, I would expect.
Yeah.
That's just amazing.
It is.
And just to continue on your good work, you're doing a great
thank
job.
Thank you. Thank you. And just to let you know that the Festival of Trees in Dickensville, because you know that the inside of the building is totally stuffed with Christmas.
Yes.
That this year we're going to take it outside. We're
that'd
going
be
to
nice.
We're going to expand it. George is all about Christmas.
Yes,
and
he is.
So we're now going to look at the outside property, and we've actually talked about it the last several years, haven't we, George, to start decorating the outside. But what stopped us, we were a little bit worried that maybe people would come onto the property at nighttime and maybe start taking the lights or something. But as George said, we won't know until we try.
That's
so
right.
We're going to start decorating on the outside this year, right?
Yeah.
Lots of plans for that.
Okay, continue doing your good work.
Thank you.
Councillor Fancy.
Yes, Linda, enjoyed the presentation, Joy.
Thank you.
In particular, as they said, like all the things, but in particular that Christmas
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's awesome, yeah.
Years and years of work, so that didn't
happen
one year.
We actually, well, it's called the Festival of Trees now, but our Christmas room started probably back around 1992, that's how long we've been doing it, and it started just in one room in the museum, and it was all about the children. It was all about bringing the school classes in, which we did, and then, I don't know, it just grew from there, and we've been doing it every year, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and we're up to, I think, 35 Christmas trees, and but now, this year, we go outdoors. I'm not sure how we'll do it, but we will. Yeah. Thank you.
The other question I have to ask is, I know we talked to other people before about some different things. And, have you approached Dalhousie or anything for doing maybe mock trials?
Well, when I spoke about the mock trials that we work with the law students, mm-hmm. In the high school, our high school here, the mock trial is supplied by the province, the provincial court system. You work with them. Because when they're interested in seeing the law classes in the high schools do these mock trials, so they look after it all. We have the mock trial, and we're currently working with one of the high school teachers who does the law class,
right.
And they'll at some point they'll be doing a mock trial at the courthouse. Yeah,
Dalhousie or something where they have the law students. You put them down to do something.
Well, but that's something that we've talked to them about as well,
sure.
But we haven't gotten anywhere yet with Dal.
Okay.
Yeah, we were really pleased when one of their professors, Archie Kaiser, one of their professors at Dal. We were just tickled when he came. He came into Liverpool and wanted to go up to the courthouse, he said, because his partner is the provincial judge, Ann Derrick, and they love the courthouse, and they said that they were the ones that donated part of their library of legal books, and they went around the provincial court and gathered the judges' robes and put that all together, and so we're very fortunate. It's amazing how the legal system has taken an interest in this courthouse and the preservation of it. Yeah. Judge Hiram Carver, when he was there last Monday, I didn't realize he was a judge who sat there for 35 years, and he was just full of stories of that courthouse. And I don't know if you noticed the prisoner's box that was there yesterday. He remembered. As soon as he saw that, he said, I remember many prisoners sitting in that box. And it's funny, that prisoner's box came from the courthouse. I don't know how much Hannah and Tamika went over it with you, but that courthouse, when the restoration began a number of years ago, when that building went through its total restoration, that prisoner's box was in the courthouse. And they wanted to donate it to the museum, so we've had it down at the museum for almost 20 years now, and of course at the time when they brought it down after the restoration was over, they built that vestibule that you walked in through the entryway. So when we were able to use the courthouse as a museum, we said, okay, it's time for the prisoner's box to go back home. But we couldn't get it through the door because of that vestibule.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of our board members, David Nickerson, bless his heart, we all know the skilled cabinet maker he is, he said, no problem, I will take that prisoner's box apart, I'll put it on the back of my truck, take it up to the courthouse, and I'll put it all back together.
Oh, my God.
You would never know
that
was taken apart, and he did. It went up there in pieces, and
wow.
He put that, he is amazing. So that's, he did a wonderful job on putting that back together and, you know, getting it back to the courthouse. Yeah.
Any other council have a question? Yeah. Councilor Fraylor?
What you didn't mention is that you guys are great partners with Privateer Days.
Brian, actually, I remember that this morning, and I thought, I didn't even put a slide in there. Yes, that's right. Yes.
So it would be nice for... you've got a new event coming up
this
year.
Yes, we do.
Which is really exciting for us down in the park. So,
yeah.
And that's just one of many things that you guys do.
Yes, we, and I did. I apologize, I forgot to mention that we are the history part of Privateer Days, the Privateer Days Committee. And we really enjoy doing that. We have a great team that works on that. And actually, our team is the same team that works on everything. But they're, so yes, we came up with the idea that we'd like to try a colonial market during Privateer Days. And with the help of, you know, our wonderful skilled reproduction clothing maker, Gail Hamlin, she was our sewing team leader, and we made lots of new reproduction clothing for it, because we'd like to see our colonial market have all of our vendors selling colonial type wares, but also be in colonial reproduction clothing. We have Brady's, who's going to sponsor us. We're actually using all of their big tents, and plus the Regent's tent. And we have probably, I'll say maybe a dozen vendors who, this year it was an invitation only, because we had to try and find people who were selling, who could sell colonial type wares. And so we have that done. We also invited Acadia First Nations to take a booth. We're supplying all of the prop material, the tables. Privateer Days was good enough to give us a budget to be able to have these tables built. And the basket company up in the valley, I forget the name of them, but they donated all of the prop baskets to us for this event. So, well, that will only grow. We're also going to be serving food. We'll have demonstrators there as well, doing spinning or needlework or wood carving. So we'll have Simeon Perkins walking through, doing a little bit of animation. And so good plans. And yeah, we'll see how the colonial market works. It'll be down on the waterfront. And we're excited about that. And you know, hope that people really take to it, because we'd like to, you know, bring it back each year and maybe make that grow as well.
Any other councillor have a question or comment this morning? Deputy Mayor McLeod?
It's good to hear about the market, and it's actually adding more of the historical aspect of Privateer Days, which,
yes,
you know, it's difficult to keep that going over the years, but with that new added feature, it's going
well,
to be.
And that's, that actually is what we were looking at, like seeing people, starting to have people walk around in colonial type clothing, and that could grow each year, you know, that part of it. Yeah, just having that visual.
Getting back to the Queens County, the Queens Museum of Justice.
Oh, yeah.
Are they listed with the Nova Scotia film industry as a possible prop or something that could be used for film?
I don't know that they're actually listed, but we have been approached. Actually, there was a show, there was an East Link show that did a paranormal night there, did
yes,
a paranormal
I saw that.
Filming.
I saw that on East Link.
Yeah,
yeah,
and but no,
it's,
I don't
it's
know that it's actually. Oh yeah, yeah. I don't know that it's actually listed.
No, but the communication between could be really.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Any other councilor have a question or comment? Okay. Well, thank you, Linda and George, for a very interesting presentation.
Thanks for
today.
Having us.
Yeah, I did say a lot, didn't I?
You were providing backup to Linda.
I was, yeah. I got a pin that went right. So.
Well, thank you both.
Okay,
well, thank you
thanks.
Very much. We appreciate it.
Okay.
This is only the beginning.
Something I should have at start. I didn't see it. The on our reports. Our bylaw enforcement report, I'd like to have a comment on that down in under the report section. I don't think that's attached to our agenda, is it?
No, it's not, Councilor Fancy, but I do understand that under 7.1, we have a dangerous on site, so perhaps Kelly and Hurley would be able to answer a question during that portion of the agenda.
Okay, so we could do it there. I ask maybe for the future, could we have that attached so everybody could see it?
They are, as I understand, under the present procedure, circulated to councilors previously. They are posted on our website.
No.
Are they not on our website? CIO, would you like to give us an update on procedure of reports?
We get a lot of reports every month, and it just becomes a lot of extra work and effort and stuff, and we don't get a lot of hits on those websites, so the information is publicly available if anybody wants to have access to it. But generally, they're internal reports for council's purpose and for staff, for accountability purposes, and if there's ever anything in there particular that the member of council wants to highlight, which is, I think, what you're discussing today, there's certainly an opportunity to bring that forward as an item on the council agenda to
do that.
Otherwise, we'd have a page of just reports.
So I could just add that under reports every time if I wanted to make a comment under report. But if not, we won't report under report.
Exactly. Is there something specific that was notable that
that's
you want
right.
to key on?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Councilor Fancy. We will move on now to 4.0, tabling of petitions. We have no petitions to file today. Are there any petitions to bring forward today? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions today. Under 5.0, public question comment session. This is an opportunity for members of the gallery to provide comments or questions. Please state your name, your address, and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Leon Robertson, College Street, Liverpool. A couple of things. First of all, I want to mention that 9.3, a copy of the implementation report that CIO has put into the package. I think that's very good. It gives us an update on where we are with things that have been approved or involved with council. So it's good to see that there. FCM conference, which was held recently in Halifax, did we have representation from this council?
No, we did not, Leo.
Is there a reason for that?
The ability was offered to all councillors, and we had no takers at this point in time.
Yeah, the reason I'm that, I thought maybe it might be because it's held, as you know, in different places across Canada, and where it was in Halifax, I don't think some of you know. I remember attending one of those FCM conferences in Hamilton, Ontario, way back. Anyway, the other thing, could you give us a quick update on the report with respect to the well? Would that be maybe back on stream again?
It's my understanding that we had an equipment failure at the well last week.
Right.
That was repaired. After a amount of work occurs on a water system, specifically a municipal water system, which that is, it must be shocked. It must be disinfected, and then after several days, it needs to be tested several times to assure that the water is back to the quality it needs to be before it can be open to the public. It's my understanding that sometime midweek this week, it should be in that position to be reopened to the public.
So it should be in the next few days, it should be back on my community. Also, I believe with respect to sidewalks, remember mentioning before, over in Bristol Avenue, where you put the yellow lines where the hips are and so on, and the sidewalk for the safety purposes and so on. If I remember correctly, I believe there's something put in the budget this year to do more for the town.
There is, correct.
Yeah, and I was just wondering when that may start.
At this point in time, it's on the it's on the work list for engineering and works department. They are certainly at this point in time, if you've noticed, they've been doing some work in a number of locations within the town.
Yes.
In addition, we have the pool season, which is coming very quickly, so it will be scheduled in, and hopefully we'll get a week when we don't have rain, and certainly the paint and the work that is done will be of a high quality because it will adhere very quickly to the sidewalk.
Yeah, I noticed the crosswalks and things have been updated and repainted in the last few weeks, and it makes much better because they're pretty well worn out prior to that. There's also, you have in here the purchase of a piece of land, I believe it's north of 103 from Mr. Sapp, for $1,500, 6.5 acres, and it looks
Yes, it does. It belongs, it joins the property that the region owns at the end of the Crusher Road, where we have our pit operation, so to speak.
Yeah, so it'd be a good idea to have that, and it's, it looks like it's a very good price. Just one other thing, and my time will be up, I'm sure. We brought your park here, and we know that priority is coming and so on. Is any further consideration or considerations being given to placing a bandstand down there at some point in time? I've brought this up before, and I'll...
Yes, you have, and there's no active discussion at the present time on building a large bandstand.
You say there is?
There is not, not at the present time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today?
I'm Scott Christian, I'm at Mersey Point, new to the community. And I'm not sure, pardon my lack of knowledge of the decorum and whatnot around tabling of petitions. This cannot just be done by a sole member of the community or some signatures required prior to tabling the petition.
There is a process and a number of signatures that are required to put forward a formal petition to the Region of Queens.
Okay. And absent of a formal petition, and perhaps I need to become better prepared, but it's just as a newcomer to the community, one thing I've noticed is since last summer when we finished up the road construction on School Street, there's a lot of stop sign approaching signs in Liverpool, but there isn't one in the spot where it is obviously needed, and that's that line crest when you're coming down the hill where School Street intersects with Main Street. There's no stop sign approaching. I'm not even sure if the road crews put the stop sign approaching on the wrong end of the street after they wrapped up business, but that's the one blind stop sign in town. And as when the new road was open and I came down, there's, whoa, you got to stop in a hurry right there. And so I thought I would just bring that up to you folks.
And certainly it's helpful that residents bring forward concerns and issues so that we can react to those concerns. A stop sign warning is not an item that requires petition. We can take that through staff and have them look at that issue. It's a traffic authority recommendation that actually brings that forward, but it makes sense to provide warning of a stop sign at the bottom of the hill. So I've made a note of that, and we'll certainly pass that on to staff to follow up.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak this morning?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I really don't have questions this morning, but I do have a couple of comments. One is in regard to the various items that are coming forth from North Queens. That was an area where business is proposing for a period of time, and it's very pleasing to see some people coming forward to open new businesses, and that may make it possible for other businesses to come forward and revitalize that part of the area and increase the tax base and also be promoters of events and so forth in the West Queens area. So I'm very pleased to see residents stepping forward to do that. Also, in regard to the various land transactions and so forth within South Queens, that's very positive as well, as it consolidates some properties and makes it more attractive for development. And also, we mentioned that this was part of the gravel postponement area for the region, and with the number of protests that you read about in the paper to people complaining about quarries and gravel pits and so forth in their communities, the more of these areas that are in public hands, the better, because we can't proceed without them, but there seems to be a protest lobby that is always getting involved in speaking against items that can move forward. I don't have anything else of importance, so just thank you for listening.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery this morning? Thank you very much. Counselor Fancy?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment, one thing on what Leon said about the FCM. I was planning to go, but the way the situation set up is that for one item you want to go for, you got to go for the whole conference, which ends up costing the region a lot of money just to go for one little thing, which is, it's unfair, but I'm not going to go up for one little thing that's going to cost a lot for, you know, for the whole thing, so you have to end up getting the information back. So that's it. I just wanted to make a comment that we don't care about it, it's just that the cost for one thing is not, is too high.
Thank you, Counselor Fancy. We'll move on to the next item, which is 6.0, approval of minutes. 6.1, regular council minutes, May 22nd, 2018, were circulated. Are there any errors or omissions in those minutes that circulated? A motion to approve those minutes would be in order. Moved by Deputy Mayor McLeod, seconded by Councilor Brian Fraley. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? Those opposed? Thank you. It is approved. 6.2, public hearing, May 17th, 2018, development agreement, Lewis and Sarah McLaughlin. Are there any errors or omissions in those minutes that circulated? A motion to approve those minutes would be in order. Moved by Councilor Fisk, seconded by Councilor Fancy. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question? For all those in favor of the motion? Those opposed? It is carried. Thank you. 6.3, Committee of the Whole minutes, March 20th, 2018. Are there any errors or omissions in those minutes of circulated? Hearing none, a motion to approve those minutes would be in order. Moved by Councilor Mews, seconded by Councilor Fraley. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? All those opposed? It is approved. 7.0, dangerous or unsightly premises. So I would ask our bylaw officer, Kelly Ann Hurley, to come forward, please.
Morning.
Who would like to take the lead on 7.1? Councilor Mews?
I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality declare the property located at 379 Old Pomeroon Road, White Point, Nova Scotia, as dangerous and unsightly as defined in the Municipal Government Act of Nova Scotia, and that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality cause an order to be served upon the owners of the property located at 379 Old Pomeroon Road, White Point, Queens County, Nova Scotia, requiring that within 30 days of the date of service of the order, the following work be carried out. Number one, clean up and removal of all non-source separated household garbage. Number two, clean up in remnant lumber, plastic, broken toys, tires, etc. strewed around property. Number three, demolition of unsafe makeshift garbage box. Four, ongoing lawn care and property maintenance. And number five, rodent remediation. And that the owners fail to comply with the order, the administrator and the cause requirements of the order to be carried out, and all expenses incurred by the Region of Queens Municipality become the responsibility of the owners.
Seconded to that, Councillor Johnson. Kellyanne, would you like to give us a briefing on this?
379 Old Pomeroon Road, White Point, Queens County, Nova Scotia. PID number 7004-7253. Assessed owner, Judith Ann Fleming. Estate of, care of Ramona Fleming, life lease. The offending property has been on the Region of Queens Municipalities bylaw enforcement roster many times throughout my years with this department. Serious issues were identified in 2015 regarding dangerous and unsightly conditions and also including solid waste concerns, which resulted in a formal order by the Region of Queens Council in January of 2016. The order was not satisfied, thus requiring the Region of Queens to tender the project to complete the order for full compliance. I return today for yet another request for a formal order regarding stockpiles of non-source separated household garbage, plastics, lumber, construction and demolition materials, tires, metals, broken toys, etc., strewn throughout the property. A request to remove an unsafe makeshift garbage box built to store more garbage, ongoing lawn care and property maintenance, and implementation of rodent control measures due to infestations resulting from serious garbage issues on the property. The residents of the dwelling have received numerous fines from myself for the issues as noted, and staff has worked very hard to rectify these issues in the attempt to further combat any foreseeable complaints. This has been a repeat concern for years, and many temporary solutions have been implemented. The neighboring residents are in turmoil for this on-again, off-again situation, thus my recommendation to you today. An update. I was there yesterday at about noon hour. Half of the lawn has been mowed. Some of the garbage has been source separated and is piled and ready for curbside removal. But again, a majority of the recommendations for the order today have not yet been completed.
Any comments or questions of councillors on this issue? Councillor Kelly?
I'm just curious as to, you know, to me, I look at it and think, well, this is just a vicious circle. You know, they did it in 16, they do it again. We're constantly spending taxpayers' money to go in and clean up a property, which we're I guess you could pretty much guarantee is going to happen again, because there's no onus on the owners to keep the property clean and tidy and, you know, and in good order. So is there another solution? Like, what do we have, any other remedies to ensure that this takes place, other than just constantly going in there and cleaning up people's property for them using taxpayers' money?
Following protocol as per dangerous and unsightly premises at this stage in the game, that's all we can do.
Right.
I've had the curbside inspector involved. I've had G&E trucking involved. We've had our solid waste management clerk, Mr. Scott LeBlanc, very much involved with education, and of course myself on an ongoing issue.
One question I have to ask was that you talk about the fines, and I understand that not all fines that are fined are paid. So is this appropriate to ask? If people keep getting fined and have to pay that much money out, that it would then in turn say, well, I'm not going to pay that fine again. But that doesn't seem to deter from the situation. So. I don't know what I'm asking for a question, really.
Well, I can't speak on behalf of the justice system, but eventually it catches up with them. I can say that for sure.
Okay.
The Department of Justice has offered a payment plan to individuals so they can pay a minimum payment monthly so that they can satisfy the request for fine. So, yes. That's all I can do is issue the fines.
Yeah, I know.
I just, you know, we do have a first, second, and third offense fine.
Right.
These individuals have been issued 4 fines, 2 of them under one section of our solid waste management bylaw, and 2 under another section. And we've now gone to the second offense fine. Now the fines are $410. The next one will be $697.50. And every fine thereafter.
I would allow our CAO to have a comment in.
Just to clarify on that, so those provincial fines, which our bylaw enforcement officer issues based on the legislation that we have available to us, there was a comment about taxpayers' money. So if we hire external resources to clean up this property or any particular property, then we bill it back to that property owner. And you would think over a period of time, if the burden of they can't pay the fines, they're not paying us, so eventually after a few years it goes to tax sale.
Correct.
And then you would hope if it did go to tax sale, vehicle thing. We could register with the province and they'd opt out or redo their license or their registration. But this particular case, without going back to court and bringing in the sheriff to actually win and take goods from the property and then resell them to get our money back, that would be our only avenue at this particular point, and that's not a direction we want to go with this move.
So thank you.
Deputy Mayor McBride?
Kelly, under the rodent remediation aspect of this, is it left up to them to get rid of those rodents? I mean, rodent remediation is basically you have to hire somebody to come in and do that, or how does that work?
Well, ultimately, it's to the responsibility of the property owner to do that. But if they do not satisfy the order, then I will tender the process and have a professional go in and do what needs to be done.
So under that aspect, then, is there another government department that would go under, like, whether under health or environment? There's nothing that covers that type of situation?
Unfortunately not. An infestation with Department of Environment constitutes an entire township.
Okay. So under that remediation aspect of it, the other things are basically confined to the property, but the rodent aspect of it could affect other properties around.
Absolutely.
And that's a real concern.
And thus the complaints. I'm getting numerous complaints from neighboring residents regarding an infestation in rodents due to the food supply. So the food supply needs to be removed.
Yep, gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Where this is a long-term reoccurring, have we ever tried to get to the root cause as to why? Mm-hmm. Are the people physically unable to remove the garbage? Is there an issue there? And maybe we can't get, you know, if we got to the root cause, maybe there's nothing we can do about it. But at some point in time, if we don't get to the root cause, we're going to clean it up and it's just going to get worse and it's going to get worse. Has there been any effort to figure out?
I can't stress to you enough how much effort has been given on this property regarding education. As I say, I had the curbside inspector involved. We've spent numerous hours educating this family to do what needs to be done.
That's fair.
Councilor Muse?
This is my district, and I've had more calls over this house than I've had on anybody else. The rats are moving out and going to the surrounding houses. They're up like five houses away now, moving in. One of the guys has told me that he opened up his barbecue and there was a rat in his barbecue. So Kelly's been doing what she can, doing a wonderful job. But, you know, we got to do something. Just can't keep going on and on. You know, the guys are complaining, you know, they're worried about the grandkids running around because the rats are up there running around. You go up there and in the evening and drive by and all you see is eyes. These, you know, one guy has told me he shot 22 so far. You know, it just...
That's mild.
Yeah.
That's mild.
You know, what do we do? I mean, we got to do something. You know, it's been an ongoing problem.
Thank you, Councilor Hughes. Kellyanne, are there any representatives of the property here today?
No, there is not.
Any other questions or comments of councilors on this issue? Are you ready for the question?
Questions.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you very much. And Kellyanne, if you would, if Councilor Fancy has one question,
yes.
Comment on the report.
As being a counselor and being part of the litter abatement group too, I like to look at the monthly report, and the one thing that comes up for this month is the illegal dumping. We have four incidents or whatever, a report from this. And I had talked with Kellyanne before and to find out the information in case she couldn't say it or I could say it, but do you want to say it or do you want me to go forward to understand what's going on with that?
For the month of May, we had four incidents of illegal dumping, two fines issued at $237.50 each, and two investigations ongoing. I work very hard to try to get an admission of guilt. It saves us from court sessions. And of course, 100% cleanup. We have zero tolerance for illegal dumping, so. And I might add, those two, out of those two, we've had full cleanups as well. Is that it?
No.
Oh.
Councilor Trevor?
Yes, yes, yes.
That doesn't seem like a very big fine based on the actions. Is that something that we have control over? Is that something set by somebody else?
My supervisor, Mike McLeod, and I are working on that. We're in hopes of raising that fine level to a minimum of $500. But at this stage, it hasn't come to council yet, but I do understand that that we're working on that. So that will be the recommendation, I think.
Thank you.
Deputy Mayor McLeod?
Kelly, this goes back to on-site premises, and I just want to let everyone know that you must have a file as wide as your table that you're sitting at, and hundreds of people that you are addressing. And I know you try to work well with them, give them an opportunity to clean it up,
yes,
pay attention to them, but that doesn't often work. And this is the first one we've had on our agenda for a long time.
Right. We follow protocol, and we do a formal order to comply,
yeah,
before this.
Mm-hmm.
And most times we get our compliance, mm-hmm, and I do work very hard in the hopes of having the properties cleaned up, and of course not having to, you know, come back again. But not always does that work.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always get the compliance, thus my visits to council,
mm-hmm,
for a formal order.
Yeah, we've already dealt with dangerous and unsightly,
mm-hmm,
so we're getting back to the subjects we've already dealt,
well,
with. So we'll move on to the report issue, which was the reason Kellyanne was going to answer questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I have Councillor Fisk next on the
just a quick question, Kelly, if you don't mind. As you know, my area was an illegal dump that you looked after.
Yes.
Has that been cleaned up?
Not yet.
Thank you.
We're working on cleanup.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other councilor have a question on the report? Councilor Kelly?
Yeah, I'm just always curious. You know, you gave out the two fines, you caught the two people that did the illegal dumping, because it's always like, to me anyway, I think to most people, it's like, why people do this? Do you have an understanding from these two people as to what caused them to do this illegal dumping in the first place?
I'd rather not say at this stage.
Oh, okay. I just don't understand whether it's
just to be
a,
kind, right?
A pure,
yeah,
ignorance of the law, or just a pure ignorance in general, or was there some sort of, did it fall off, sometimes it fell off the back of the trucker, you know what I mean? I don't know if it was, if that's
no,
all
we,
I
mean, we've had
curious
incidents of garbage falling off the,
yeah,
backs of trucks, and we work with people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But again, when I receive an admission of guilt, of course we have zero tolerance, so we,
yeah,
have to do what we have to do.
Okay.
Initially, I mean, number one priority is to have it cleaned up.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Councilor Fancy?
I found it interesting when I talked to someone, I won't mention names or anything, who had seen one of these incidents. What they do is they dump it and then they try to cover it up. It's like I don't understand that. Put dump it in the wrong place in the first place and then try to put stuff over to hide it.
I had an issue of that last week at the leaf and yard waste.
Yes.
Councilor Frill?
When you say clean up, is it the offenders that are doing the cleaning?
Absolutely.
God.
Well, 98% of the time, depending. If it's one bag of garbage and I have to go through it to find the necessary identification, then I won't leave the bag behind. I'll dispose of it myself.
And then we always do a post on social media about that to make people aware of.
We do our very best to.
This is still happening.
Yes,
and
we do our very best to work with Heather Cook to ensure that publicly we.
Another great.
We keep the public up to date on as to what's happening.
Yeah.
Councilor Fancy,
and with the site we started with the Queens County litter abatement. If we see something, we're going to post it. So we posted some pictures of things that are going on. One other thing I wanted to ask Kellyanne is, do we ever implement the people who do this to be able to go out and do work and cleaning up? I remember years ago, I remember things like that had happened. But is that something that can't be done, or?
Well, I'm not judge and jury, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
We did have an incident where we had mischief conducted to the Tourist Bureau, and we had the offenders clean up massive quantities of garbage.
Just cleaning it up, and all of a sudden you get involved, and it seems to make a sense that you wouldn't want
how good we did.
Well, thank you, Kellyanne.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.